Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Congress has voted to approve a $867 billion farm bill. The bill received strong bipartisan support. President Trump is expected to sign it as soon as next week. This morning, we spoke on the phone with Scott Vanderwall. He is president of the South Dakota Farm Bureau.
Well, really, the 30,000-foot view is that it gives us certainty going forward as the farmers and ranchers are entering the loan renewal season with bankers. The banks need to know that the safety net programs and risk management tools will be out there. Also, there's some foreign market development provisions in the Farm Bill that will help to expand our markets and look for new markets, which is what we desperately need in a low-income sort of economy like we have now. And then, of course, there are environmental stewardship programs included in the Farm Bill as well.
When you talk about the banks need to know, tell me what those conversations are like with lenders right now. How have those conversations just changed for farmers? Bring it down to that human level.
Yeah, there's going to be more scrutiny this year in a lot of cases, according to what we're hearing anyway. Farmers have been losing equity for about 3 or 4 years now in a row. And it gets to where your equity decreases a little bit, and bankers get concerned about that. So when they start talking about how much to loan or if to loan in the coming year, those are all considerations they take into consideration, where they'll look at the crop insurance levels and the ability of the Farm Bill, what's the word I'm looking for, risk management tools, if they're there and if the producer is using them. The thing that concerns us is that there could be some pretty hard discussions going on this winter where a banker and a farmer that have developed relationships over many years are going to have to sit across the desk from each other, and the banker might have to say, you know, things have declined to where we can't loan you money this year. That's a very sad situation and puts the farmer or rancher into a really tough situation.
Right, and we've seen an increase in farm bankruptcies in our region as well. So this isn't the passage of a farm bill is good news, but it's certainly not going to take away all the pain of what's happening in the markets right now.
That's correct. It just gives us some certainty, like I said, that the risk management tools are there. Of course, the crop insurance program is there, and market development. That's one of the biggest things long term that we need to get us out of this economic situation.
Yeah, let's talk
about.
Like
you said, it's certainly not the end, because low prices are still here, and we're going to have to be innovative and do some things to help hang on until the economy turns around.
Right. Let's talk about foreign market development, because we're looking at a time where farmers have soybeans, for example, that the trade war with China has really impacted them. You say that's a long-term solution. Talk about what that sort of foreign market development looks like. The money is there. Who is making those efforts? How is it coordinated? Paint a picture for us so we understand more how that works.
Sure. The government is always looking for new markets for us. Our trade negotiators just finished up the agreements with Canada and Mexico, so that's a step in the right direction. They tell us they're going to European Union, United Kingdom, countries like Japan along the Pacific Rim, the ones that would have been involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which would have been good for us, by the way, and ultimately end up back at China. And there's been a little bit of news where the president met with the Chinese leader down in Argentina and at least got a start. They started talking about some possibilities of getting trade started again, and that's all good news. Anywhere we can find a new market or an expanded market in the world is a good thing for us.
Tell me a little bit about the lobbying efforts and the conversations you've had either with South Dakota's congressional delegation or with others to really have the voices of South Dakota farmers and producers heard.
Yeah, in the Farm Bureau, we've got strong organizations in all 50 states plus Puerto Rico. So we've all been really making it a team effort to help our representatives in Congress understand what the situation is economically in agriculture. When the last Farm Bill was written, we were in really good times back in 2008 to 2013, and nobody thought we'd really need it. Well, then in just a couple of years later, the crisis started heading down, and expenses didn't really go down with them. We're in a strange situation now where just about every commodity that's involved in agriculture is at or below break-even levels. So each of us states working with our elected representatives, along with American Farm Bureau's lobbyists and the influence we have in general in Congress, all led to getting this farm bill passed. And like I said, it provides certainty going forward now.
Tell me a little bit about the environmental protections that are in this omnibus legislation.
Yeah, that's basically the CRP program, Conservation Reserve. It expands those acres a little bit, but also brings some things in line so the government's not competing with young farmers and ranchers for land. That's been a bit of a problem. There's also working lands conservation programs like the Conservation Security Program, our Stewardship Program, and the EQIP program, where it provides incentives for farmers and ranchers to do environmentally friendly things. And for the most part, we're doing those things. And so it just adds an added incentive to do that.
What does that look like in South Dakota? How will South Dakota farmers see that? Is it just a continuation of what we already have?
A little bit, but also, it's a continued program. Like Conservation Reserve certainly has been a big thing for South Dakota, where the original intent was to set aside sensitive lands, highly erodible land that erodes easily, put that into grass. We've worked with the Congress to not just make that a set-aside program where it's not being used, but to allow haying and grazing on it some. And haying and grazing is healthy for grasslands. And we think we've made a little progress on that as well, so that they're not just not used at all.
What are some of the areas where you're disappointed or you wish more could have been done?
One of our priorities was to get some fixes to the Swamp Buster, the way the Swamp Buster program is administered. We have some areas in South Dakota, North Dakota especially, where wetland determinations are hard to get done accurately yet. And the appeals process is very, very cumbersome and expensive if a landowner doesn't agree with the determination that's done. That's been a terrible thing. And we worked real hard with Congress, and of course, when you've got 535 people with their own opinions, you can't get everything you want. So we're going to continue those efforts administratively and see if we can get some things taken care of that way.
I've been reading about increased money for organic farmers or research on organic farming. Does that affect South Dakota farmers at all? Is that a provision that they should be looking into, paying attention to?
Well, that's a thing that's out there that's available if people want to try that. It's a lot of work, and it's a big process to go through to become an organic producer. And there are probably more in other states per capita than what we have in South Dakota, but it is an option that they could look at. It's kind of a niche market where you get a higher price for your products, but it also is more difficult to raise those. But we're going to have to be innovative going forward, and maybe that's an option for some people.
Some people in Congress were criticizing expansion of certain subsidies to family members that they thought were too far out. Can you address that at all? What are they missing with that criticism, or do you agree with that criticism?
Well, I guess I would answer it this way, that as family farms and ranches expand and grow, that's probably a good thing, because you get expanded participation by family members. So in some cases, it might have been two brothers that started a farm back in the 1970s or 80s. And then they had kids, and they've got grandkids now. And so you've got cousins and second cousins working together on the same farm. And it's all owned and operated by the family. And so I believe it is appropriate to make those available that way.
Also making news, the legalization of the production of industrial hemp. And they're saying that could grow into a $20 billion industry by 2022. How does that impact the state of South Dakota?
I'm not sure if our climate is right for raising that or not. I haven't done any research on that. But nationwide, the Farm Bureau has had policy in favor of that, because it is a crop that can be grown by farmers. And it's not used for the purposes like marijuana is. It seems like it's a little bit confused at times, and they've had challenges in the past where a drug dog can't tell the difference. But I think they're getting past that a little bit. But with hemp, you can the fiber is very strong. It can be used for lots of things, and I understand the oil is a good product that can be produced. So that's another way for farmers to diversify and expand and try to help make a living.
Right. Do you think that we're poised with the rapid, how quickly that industry now is poised to grow? Is South Dakota poised to get the market share that perhaps is at its greatest potential here? Or are we a little bit behind because of, an understanding of what exactly that is and what it means?
Yeah, I would say your second point would be right on. Probably we don't understand what it is or how it can be done yet, but it's certainly something that could be looked into by somebody that's looking for a way to expand or diversify. Other states are really pushing it. I know like Wisconsin, Indiana, and that area, they're looking at that as a strong possibility.
Yeah. Scott, you mentioned, family members, and there's also provisions for permanent funding for veteran and minority farmers. Talk a little, if you will, about new people trying to find their way in the ag industry. Starting from scratch is a very hard thing to do, but why is it important to find that next generation, whether it's somebody who's in an actual family or somebody new who wants to become a farmer? Why is that such a push right now?
Yeah, that's a good question, and the reason is that the age of the average farmer is up around 57 or 58 years old right now, and there's a tremendous number of farms and ranches and also a tremendous number of acres that are going to be changing hands in the near future. And if younger people can't get involved in agriculture, it's going to get swallowed up by neighbors or worse yet, multinational corporations. Somebody's going to be working the land, and we want to make sure that that family farmers are in charge of that. And that's the best way to keep the personal touch on our food production system in this country.
What happens next? Because you mentioned there's increased, the job isn't done now when it comes to having the conversations and trying to work for South Dakota farmers and producers. What do you look for going forward now that, or do you just take a break for for just a few minutes?
So you're talking about other issues and things that are on our plate?
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, sure. Yeah, after the president signs the farm bill, certainly implementation is the next thing that we're going to be watching and involved in and make sure the intent of Congress is followed. But we've also got a lot of other things going on. Immigration and ag labor is a huge one for us, where we've got dairies in South Dakota that have a real hard time finding help. Local people don't want to milk cows every day, all day long, and so sometimes immigrant labor is needed. And we need a legal, stable way to source that labor. And at the end of this last Congress, we thought we came really close to getting that fixed, but it looks like politically it's not going to survive past the end of this Congress. We're also very involved in the regulatory rollback that the president has engaged in. Just a couple days ago, we participated in an event where the new clean water rule was rolled out by the EPA. And we're really, really glad to see that, because that's going to take a big shadow off of agriculture in that regard. The old Clean Water, Waters of the U.S. rule would have put just about every acre of land under federal jurisdiction. And this new rule, which we think will be a lot more common sense and workable, will take that shadow away.
Let's expand on that, because this is another thing about education, and it, when people say, oh, it's the clean water rule, that sounds like a very
right.
positive thing. So talk about environmental stewardship and farming in South Dakota and what that really looks like once that regulation is rolled back.
Sure. Well, the basis to the thing is that states are the best qualified to take care of their water issues. So having the federal water police come in and tell us whether we can do some chisel plowing or tillage on a certain piece of land, or whether we can spray or not in a certain area, really isn't proper, because pesticides are crop protection products are regulated already a different way. And the old Waters of the U.S. rule was so ambiguous. A regular farmer and rancher couldn't go out in their field or rangeland and look at a structure or a feature of the land and tell whether it was actually a regulated area by the federal government or not. So if that had been put into effect, which it hasn't in most of the states, farmers and ranchers could have had to hire lawyers and engineers and people like that for very expensive amounts of money to find out if they were federally regulated. And the idea with the new Clean Water Rule now is to let the states take care of those issues. And also these areas that are not logically navigable waters, which is what it's all about, do not have to be regulated by the federal government in that way.
And let's go back to let's go back to immigration, ag, labor. What have we seen a drop in numbers? What's happening politically that's really showing up in the bottom line of folks here in the state?
Well, when it's so hard to find the legal labor, it's a bad situation where people can't hire enough help to run their operations successfully. And so then it takes away your option of expanding or maybe starting a new enterprise. When you talk about further south with the fruit and vegetable growers, if they've got crops in the field and can't hire enough people, those crops actually rot in the field. And it's worthless then to the farmer from an income standpoint, and it's wasted food for either the American public or the world. So we've been begging and asking Congress for many, many years now to take care of the immigration and specifically the ag labor situation, and create a program that is available for farmers and ranchers to use legally. There's a H-2A program now that can be used for seasonal workers like crops and vegetables, but that's not legal to use for year-round work, such as dairy or milking cows. So we need a program that would allow people looking for year-round workers to be able to do that legally and source labor on a stable basis.
Mm-hmm. Scott VanderWaal, president of South Dakota's Farm Bureau. Any other takeaways from the news of the U.S. Farm Bill on the way to the president's desk? Any other thoughts before we let you go back to your travels?
Sure. I would just add on our conversation about clean water. Mm-hmm. Farmers and ranchers depend upon the environment and the water and the clean air to run our operations. And it's in our best interest to take care of it and make sure the environment and water is not abused. And so people that think that we're just out here raping and pillaging the environment, for lack of a better term, are completely wrong. We depend on that, and we need to preserve that. And in addition, we eat the food that's raised on the land and with that water, and there's no reason we would contaminate it.